Wait a minute, wait a turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves. He talking Scott Catoon. I'm saying wait a minute.
Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host Scott Catoon and this is TechNoir Live from WGN Radio, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. Sitting across me, Kyle Nakasugi, the CEO and founder of Clear Cover. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott.
Congratulations, by the way. Our friends Vic Pascucci from Lightbank is on the show all the time. You guys just raised, is your initial round of funding was $11.5
million? Yes, it was.
That's the only funding you guys have had?
That's what we've taken so far, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. How long have you guys been around?
Almost a year.
So it's been a pretty good year then.
Well, yeah, we have a lot to make with that money, but we were very fortunate to be.
You have to be doing something pretty well to attract not just Lightbank, but to attract that kind of money on your initial round has to show some pretty substantial growth opportunities.
We think so. The market's going to tell us soon.
You're being very humble. I think a lot of people think there's a lot of potential. I've heard your name and Clear Cover in general flung around quite a bit. A lot of founders who come on the show. Brad Weisberg from Snapsheet was talking about it not that long ago.
Awesome.
So there's a lot of people who are paying attention. No pressure. no pressure at all. But before we kind of get into that, and I want to learn a little bit about your background and your history and all this sort of stuff, but what exactly is Clear Cover? How does it work? What is all the hubbub about?
Yeah, definitely. There's been a little hubbub, so let me clear the air. So we hope to build a smarter car insurance choice for people, which sounds a little cliche, so let me explain exactly what that means. So essentially, we believe that there's a disconnect in the insurance market today between how customers actually feel about insurance and how their insurance companies would like them to think about insurance.
Yes.
Namely, insurance customers would prefer to think about insurance less, and insurance companies really want insurance customers to think about it more.
Yes.
And that disconnect is expensive, because what they end up doing is spending a lot of time and money and energy trying to get you to care about a product that you naturally would like to ignore, and the result is you pay higher prices for car insurance.
Yeah.
So what we said is, look, we can build a tech platform that allows us to focus exclusively on moments when customers really should care about car insurance, moments when it's naturally relevant to them. And as a result, we can avoid spending all of this money on the times and places where they don't, which means we can offer them the same coverage as the big carriers for a lot less money, sometimes up to 50%.
I was going to say, the big carriers, one of which you used to work for, I'm sure just absolutely love you. Huge fan of the Nakasugi.
we love all of our friends there, but yeah.
In all reality, your background, you come from a venture background. You're also a lawyer as well by trade, so you understand the mind game and the crisis communication game that's going on between everyone. But at the same time, you always have to be respectful of the people you're disrupting. You always have to be in able to be partnership with them, because they may be disruptive. You may be disruptive to them right now, but if they have money for a reason, and if they want to start following your model at some point, you'll be competitors again, and you don't ever want to be like this nasty relationship with most of these guys, I presume, especially since most of them have clients that you eventually want.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting dynamic, right? Because I think in a sense, you know, you sort of, you do want to have respect for the encompassing industry.
Sure.
They've sort of done a lot. They've earned that respect. On the other hand, we won't let that respect stop us from competing.
No.
Right? And
no
so
chance.
Like it's sort of, for us, it's striking the appropriate balance between being friendly but also acknowledging the failings of the industry when they exist.
Yeah.
And not sort of covering those up in the interest of making friends.
Well, no, and that's just it. I mean, I actually talked to several founders, and Brad Weisberg is an example of one where there's a natural resistance that they found when they got started. And I always tell the founders when I talk to them, the steeper the resistance you find, the more likely there's something worthwhile behind it. if it was like, well, whatever, they'd be like, oh, yeah, and they'd just copy you. And
yeah,
that'd be the end of it.
Yeah.
But it's when they're like, no, this is dumb. I'm not going to do it. And you're like, well, that was awfully quick.
Yeah.
What are you hiding?
It's sort of, their model is very much, it's diametrically opposed to what we're doing, right? Like, you can't take an organization that is built to engage customers, to market to them, to buy their attention and trust, and turn that 180 degrees and say, remember all those times we told you that you should think about us and that we're your best friend? Just kidding.
Yeah.
So you know, it's like, we believe that we have an approach that is sort of hard to replicate in that big carrier environment. And as a result, we'll be friendly, but we won't be afraid to compete.
So how do you, from that next step, as you start to scale and you start really starting to grow where they all, I mean, they all already know your name, but like where they really are like, oh shit, is here they come. Where do you guys really find you're going to make your money? Because if you're taking, I'm just thinking like a person who knows nothing about either of these industries, I'm thinking, all right, if you're going to take less money and you're going to be better for the customer, that's amazing. You're going to get a lot of onboarding. But then where do you make, like at what point do you have to throw add-ons on to make money? How does this work for you guys?
It's a great question. It's the right question. So car insurance is inherently a low margin product.
Yep.
It's so one of the ClearCover was built around a series of conceptual frameworks. One of those conceptual frameworks is this idea of price dispersion. So there's this long and sort of wide body of literature in economic theory about how when you look at markets where products are homogeneous, right? Markets where products are essentially replaceable, but the customer believes that they're replaceable. You tend to see price dispersion, wide variety of prices, when those companies have instituted a place or a situation in which search costs are high. When the customer doesn't actually know they're buying something that's the same or different.
Yeah.
When there's information asymmetry, there's a lot of price dispersion. And so one of the things we believe about the market is that there's going to be an increasing amount of information symmetry, right? Or decreasing search costs,
yep.
Which is to say customers are going to know a lot more about what they're buying because there's an increasing number of entities that make it their business to help people find the right insurance, the low yep. price insurance, to compare insurance. These are growing rapidly. The Zebra is just raised a $40 million round from Excel. Like yep. these, you know, CoverHound is another one that's doing really well. Big companies, increasing amount of information available to customers, which means you would expect in a traditional economic environment, prices to compress around a narrower band that's lower because people know that they should be paying a certain amount. In the insurance business, it's very hard for the big carriers to do anything about that because their cost structures dictate pricing, as does regulation, so they can't actually make that move.
Yep.
And so what we say is, look, we'll price at that point where we believe this compressing dispersion would naturally lead the entity to be, and as a result, we'll acquire a lot of customers. But to your question, that doesn't leave a lot of margin, right?
Yeah.
If you want to be the low cost provider,
yeah, you have no choice at that point. You're playing it for the long haul because you know that all this information is going to come out and they're going to be negatively impacted. And so all of a sudden, like squeezing paste out of a canister, people are going to be leaving these major things because they're going to be pissed that mm-hmm. they know that they've been getting, you know, raked over the coals for however long. And you're an option. It's like, hey, come to us and you'll make sure that you get the best prices at all times because we know when it matters and when it doesn't. And if you get a ton of those people, bang, you win.
So in the long diatribe on economic theory, I promise has a point.
Yeah.
So being a low cost provider sort of inherently makes you low margin.
Sure.
At least in our category.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that we avoid margin. Doesn't mean there are places where margin can't be generated.
I view you as the Blue Nile. If you're familiar with Blue Nile diamonds, you're the Blue Nile of diamonds, but for insurance.
So you can make it. So volume helps.
Yeah.
But the other thing I'll mention without sharing too much is
please share.
Yeah,
I'm just writing it down. No one's listening.
Thanks.
It's just me and you and your recorder.
Yeah, and everybody else. This is an imperfect example because yeah. we have not earned this comparison, but I don't have a better one to share, so I'm going to use it anyways. Whether or not Amazon set out to become the biggest retailer in the world, they started by selling books.
Yep.
Because what books offered them was a platform in terms of capital, human capital, right? And essentially investment capital, human capital, working capital, to go into a bunch of different business areas
yep.
where they could make more money. And so, you know, again, like car insurance is our books.
Yeah.
Right? We see it as a place where we can build.
You can see it. It doesn't take a genius to see that there's a million places that this very same dichotomy of market dynamics plays out very similarly.
That's our hope.
Yeah. This is very cool. I mean, it's very fascinating. I was excited when I saw we finally got you on the block here for the show because – I mean, like I said, I've talked to Vic many times about you guys and how awesome he is, how excited he is. And I was excited when I saw the news break on it. I was like, oh, my God, I've been hearing your name for a while before that broke. And I was like, got to have to get this guy on here. You have not disappointed in talking about sort of that whole thing. Let's talk a little bit more about you now
sure.
and how a person comes up with this, because I'm going to use it, you know, like you said, maybe inappropriately. But Amazon is an example. Jeff Bezos, I don't know if you've ever heard this story or not, but do you know that if you go to relentless.com, it goes to Amazon's shopping cart?
I did not know that.
Go to relentless.com. Jeff Bezos bought relentless.com the same day that he filed the papers to start Amazon. He bought relentless.com and immediately made it Amazon because he was going to be relentless.
Interesting.
And I look at that and I think of a guy like you and I see like your journey here and it's like This is a dude, now I have a cheat sheet. I'm looking at, like, you had MBA and JD in transactional law from University of Madison, started venture capital team at American Family Insurance. That to me is a person who has a very clear understanding of what they're trying to do. Maybe not the business. I don't know what the first thing is going to be, but I know that it's going to be like this. And you were like paying attention from day one, which when I see founders like that, I like freak out a little bit because they're always successful.
I appreciate it. I'm blushing a little bit. We're on the radio.
We got a beard, so you can't tell.
Okay, good.
It's all good. But tell me a little bit about your journey. Like, am I right about this? Like, I get this relentless.com feel from you is what I get. I feel like I'm going to talk to you in 10 years and you might own the building I'm talking in.
one step at a time. I want to sell one car insurance policy first and then we'll go.
We're trying to sell the show. So I got to get the humility out of you, squeeze it out of you.
So look, there's without talking about myself too much, but.
Well, I think it's important because the journey part of this is like, you don't like the way that you explained your business.
Yeah.
Was so, and I know you have to be thoughtful. I mean, obviously you're running a business. It was so thoughtful and so like, so carved properly and so understanding of exactly what you're trying to do that I think it's a really good opportunity for other founders to get a glimpse into like the mindset of a person years before they launch this business, because of all the founders, I mean, I've interviewed probably 500 CEOs and founders in different levels, all the way like CEO of United, like sitting in the chair. And the really dynamic, super successful ones always have this common trait where they're absolutely obsessed with the process and it isn't even the money. It's not even the business. It's the process of like, I want to understand this market. I want to understand how it works. And then you start stumbling upon frailties and it's like, oh, well, that's easy to solve. And like an average person would never be able to do that, but you're just so locked in on it. So I think like having you kind of go through your upbringing and how you were able to get through all the things you have in your life,
it's a
big value, I think, to entrepreneurs.
Yeah, no, I appreciate
it. So I'm
going
to make you talk about yourself, is what I'm saying.
So I think, and you've given me time to think about it, which is helpful. So I think I cheated in two ways. So the first is, I've always been very intrinsically motivated, and I think the best way I can describe it is that I've always wanted things I didn't deserve, right? Like I think there I've always kind of wanted that thing I didn't really deserve to have, and so I would go out to get it, right? And like when you get that thing, then you want the next thing you don't deserve, and so like I've been very intrinsically driven. Not because I was denied anything, right? Not because I had to really struggle, but because I wanted these things I didn't deserve, and so I would go out to get them. And the second thing I did, which was cheating, is I was fortunate enough to be a venture capitalist for 4 years. And I think the transition from VC to being an entrepreneur is really complex, and everybody's journey is a little different. One of the things I think is undersold, generally speaking, is when you're a VC, you get paid to do a couple of things. One of those things is sit down with the smartest people you've ever met and have those people tell you the smartest idea they've ever had. And that's really powerful.
Yeah. That's right? What I do here every day.
You get, and
I literally
so,
get
so
to
you
talk
understand,
to
right?
You all day long.
You get to hear these people tell you these amazing ideas and they're brilliant. And then you combine that with, you actually get paid to think. Right. As an operator, you get very caught up in the day to day and like you still have to be strategic about where your company is going. But you don't have nearly as much time to just ponder the existence of the category and what works and what doesn't. And so when you combine the fact that you get to meet with these incredibly smart people and then someone pays you to go think about what they said, you get to create this lattice work of theory. Yeah. Right. Which is like, look, this is happening and this is happening and this is happening. And this person said this, and being able to step back and then look at whatever that sort of lattice work of the category is, gave me the opportunity to say, here's what's missing.
Yeah.
From a perspective that was, we think, a little unique. So like, my journey was fortunate in that I was put in a couple different positions where I had a viewpoint on the market which was handed to me, which was unique and gave us a chance to develop this thing we think could be pretty powerful.
It's funny. I in no way compare myself to you. You're building something way past where my pay grade is. But it's ironic. I guess I relate to you a lot because I look at my own background and educationally and professionally, and was always the same way. I had this opportunity to spend time early on in my life with some incredibly successful people who sitting in boardrooms that I did not belong in, sitting there in Umbros and tennis shoes, listening to these these like super dudes go over all kinds of stuff. And then I get into commercial real estate and I'm managing these properties for people who are some of the biggest names in Chicago business. and you're sponging, right? And then I'm looking at it, and then I decide I'm going to grad school. I go to Northwestern, and I start bumping around at these events downtown with entrepreneurs. I'm like Mark Lawrence before Spot Hero was building, and like all these things. And I started seeing the lines line up, like you just said, where it's like commercial real estate at the level I was at is not dissimilar from this. It's just one is physical property and one is IP.
Yep.
And so we're like playing the same game. And so now in Technori, we're now very heavily in the investment side of things and participating with companies and trying to get things rolling. I get the opportunity to sit down with a person like, yeah, we switch gears. I'm your American Family job a couple of years ago. And I can see the look in your face. You feel bad already.
you're an entrepreneur. I think you'll understand this. Like you get to that moment where you have the idea, right? And then you have to take the step.
Yeah.
And that's the part of the journey that when I was making the transition, I was frustrated at the lack of clarity in that moment because you want a rule. Right?
Sure.
You want somebody to tell you like, hey, here's when you know, here's when you're ready. And that doesn't exist either.
I think it's like, I'm sure it does for a few lucky individuals, but it's one of those things where I honestly think you're going to be, well, I mean, you just said it. You said it 10 minutes ago when you were talking about the actual building of the company. We think this is our initial product. There's so many other things that are down the line for us. Like you're going to reinvent this company 55 times.
Yeah.
And hopefully the 55th one's going to be the IPO, and it's going to be a hell of a fun day for
hopefully
everybody.
By choice, not out of necessity.
Oh, we'll no, IPO because you're just bored. You got this other company you've been baking for a while.
And no, the reinvention. We'll talk about the liquidity way down the road, but I'd like to reinvent by choice.
Oh, well, yeah. We're forced into it. You don't even have to, I mean, joking, you do have to worry about that. Everybody has to worry about that. But you are in a good position to kick off with because you're already taking that approach. You're taking a disruptive innovation kind of innovative approach right from the start. So I think you're in pretty good shape with those iterations to the company.
Yeah.
I guess the last thing I would ask is of you, for those out there who are trying to be the next you or are trying to take that first step and they don't have the clarity and it's like, do I go? What was it like that moment you decided I'm going to leave the VC job, which is a job, as you mentioned, you get paid to think, and now you're an operator responsible for a lot of people.
Yeah. Terrifying.
I bet.
There are two pieces of advice that I typically give to people who ask this question, both of which could be wrong, by the way, but this is the advice
I give. Half the stuff that comes out of my mouth is wrong. It's fine.
Yeah, if it's half for me, that's a good day. So the first is I spent a lot of time trying to get to the moment where I felt like I knew what to do. And the moment I actually arrived at was one where I was comfortable not knowing what to do. And it was subtly different, but important because the answers never present themselves. And in fact, the questions only get bigger and harder. And so arriving at that moment where you were comfortable not knowing what you're doing, and like on any given day, I know about half of what I'm doing and the rest I try and figure out, and like hopefully it gets better over time. But so you had to get there.
It probably won't, but yeah.
And then, it probably won't. And the second thing then was, and this is a little cliche, but it's also true. There was a moment when my fear of regret of having not tried was bigger than my fear of trying. And like you know when that moment hits. I knew it immediately.
Yep.
And at that point, the decision was made.
And the funniest thing is I can literally pair it back to you. That was the same exact feeling for me was I think about it right now. I mean, I think about the amount of debt that one has to take on to get this thing rolling and to just put it on ourselves and be like, all right, well, I'm rolling. I knocked on half the doors in downtown Chicago talking about tech podcast, tech platform, and everyone's like, ah, that's stupid. Podcast died in 2004. I'm like, all right, that's cool. Guess we're taking a credit card round. And I just roll with it. And I honestly got like to this, literally we had this conversation a couple weeks ago. To this day, I build what I build and spend what I spend on trying to do this because I can't live with myself knowing the opportunities that have been in front of me versus a couple $100,000 that gets lost over the, like, I know that sounds like a lot of money. It makes people feel kind of weird, but it's true. Like you're talking about millions and millions of dollars and millions of people you can impact. And instead I was like, well, I was worried about taking on some debt.
You know,
it's just, it's not worth it. And then the other part that you brought up is an amazing point about not knowing, you know, basically not knowing what you don't know and knowing what you don't know and not knowing. I try to take this on every day like this, and I'm sure you're very similar. It sounds like you're very similar in approach. And I tell this to every entrepreneur that we sit across from, that if you can, we always talk to traders. So traders, this works really well because they're used to trends. If you can sort of take all that you've learned, all the feelings and emotions and things of your failures and your successes, and you can compact it into a trend where when you wake up and somebody, I pitch this to you and you're like, I haven't formulated a thought yet, but I just, my gut instinct is no.
Yeah.
If you can get everything you've ever had in your history down to that, and then take a clean slate approach every day when you wake up and take on the problem as a brand new problem, you'll be a lot better off. If you take it going, I screwed up last week, I'm trying to think about the five things from yesterday, I got this, 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 tomorrow I got this, that's going to happen, I got to pick the kids up, like all this, if you try to take it on like that, you're going to get crushed. And so when I heard you talk about how you go into it like, I know that I don't know everything, I'm going to do the best I can with what I've got.
Yeah.
You can only, that's the only way to go. So
amazing
advice.
It's great. Acknowledging your ignorance of any particular question in front of you is allows you to operate from first principles.
Yeah.
Right? Which is super important. But you first have to acknowledge your ignorance of the situation. One of my favorite quotes is, as the circumference of my knowledge grows, so does the perimeter of my ignorance.
That's a good one.
Right? And it's just a fancy.
It needs to be a t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me sound smarter than I am because it was someone else's words. But essentially.
It's ours now.
You just, the more you know, the more you have to acknowledge you don't know things.
Yeah.
And if you can acknowledge those things, then it allows you to invent from a place of first principles, which can be really, really powerful for whether you're a venture-backed company or not, right? Acknowledging and sort of addressing an issue from first principles gets you to be, oftentimes puts you in a very different place than had you not. So
no, 100%. I'd go back with you with another quip that's very similar to what you said. And I'm not going to be able to quote it right because I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But the gist essentially is ignorant people are sure, 100% sure of everything they know, and smart people are 100% sure they'd have no idea.
Yeah.
And I think it's a principle that for almost all entrepreneurs, I think, really for everyone, quite honestly, but for all entrepreneurs, I think the more you try to think you know everything, the more you just accept you don't and do the best you can, you'll be better off.
Well, if not knowing things is a strength, we're on the right track.
I think we're golden. This has been really a great interview, great things to know. What is the very next step for you guys as you start to...
So we have an amazing
bankroll team. Now.
What's going on? We have some money. We got to turn it into more money.
Yep.
First step is we have an amazing team, which is crazy heads down right now, getting us to launch the product in California. Our plan is December of this year.
Yep. Very cool. Are you guys officing over at Light Bank now, or
no? We're in River North.
Oh, okay, cool.
So we're crammed in a small space together in River North.
And drink that limitless cool coffee they have over there.
Yeah, I know. So I visit them. Okay,
oh, there you go.
To get
Matt Matros, the Limitless guy. He's been on the show several times. Good dude.
Awesome.
Very cool. This is awesome, Kyle. Thank you so much. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Where do people go to learn more about ClearCover?
Yep, absolutely. So clearcover.com. You can sign up. It asks for your state when you sign up because we're launching California, but we want to launch everywhere next. So if you put your state in, we can make sure we get there soon.
Sounds like a plan. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can catch this episode and more at technoria.com. Download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter @technoria or follow me @Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.